Committee Chair.
Kim Bria, Member, Transportation Board.
Chris Groshko, Member, Transportation Board.
Mary Baumgartner, Council Liaison.
Lance Calvert, I'm a Public Works Director and Staff Liaison. Andrew, you want to go next?
Andrew Mallory, Board Member.
Jerry Gibilotto, City Manager.
Could you hear everybody, Andrew?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Okay, good. I've got us plugged into the Cisco system, so hopefully it'll even pick up this far across the room. So.
This is all hybrid. Look at Andrew, we are super high tech.
Yeah. Okay, next order of business is the review and approval of the June 21st summary notes. You said there was something in them, Lance, that we needed to change.
Yeah, Kevin had pointed out that he was in attendance, so somehow we got a typo in there. And he should actually be shown on as present instead of absent. So I think with that one correction, if there's any other corrections anybody notices, we can add that. But okay. I would include that in the motion.
Do you have a motion a second to approve the minutes?
I make a motion to approve the minutes of the June 24th meeting.
Second.
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Nay. Motion carries, minutes are approved. So we will now go to Lance for the review of the 2021 summary.
So attached to your packet of your agenda is the 2020 Advisory Group and Neighborhood Association annual goals. This is the stuff you guys did.
Right.
Did you get the goals attached to your packet?
You have in the email, but not here.
In color.
In
the
email.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got it off of the email.
It's in the email.
Or did maybe I didn't? I think I might have clicked the link.
Yeah, it's in the link. It's not here.
So our Google search works better than our own search function. But I have brought them up here, so I don't know if I can. I will see if I can share this screen for the group and for Andrew or whoever else. Can we all see that?
Yeah, it looks good.
So our goal, so my review of the goals was on the agenda to sort of just, and this runs in alignment with item B, which is review of the TAB annual report and goals. Looks like Kevin has joined us. So.
Sorry.
Oh, you're good. And the goal was to just give the TAB a chance to digest all these goals and talk about, as a group, what would be applicable to the TAB and anything that the TAB may want to look at or comment on. These are not separated by advisory board or anything like that. They're just the goals for the year, I think. Some of these are pretty big, so there's not like these are not annual calendar goals, in my opinion. Like, there's no way that you can accomplish everything that's on here, and you know, by the end of December of this calendar year. So I think it's really like, you know, what makes sense. Mary's here as well, and of course Jerry's here also, so we can pick their brain as well on what would be good uses of the TAB's time and effort in moving forward some of these goals. Just scrolling through here, it looks like the TAB is called out to explore public and multimodal transportation in Westland as it relates to, looks like, transit. The transportation system plan 43 and Willamette Falls Drive. Of course, the Willamette Falls Drive concept plan was just approved, so I believe that's correct. Well, we've got one more reading.
It will happen.
We've got one more reading.
And August 2nd.
And that will be officially approved. And then anything else on here that the group may want to look at? And then we can also, of course, after this discussion, go through the 2020 annual goals or council report, and any other discussion that may be there as well.
So were these refreshed for 21? Is that what it was? Kind of building off what was in place prior?
Right. So I think the typically what happens is the council will try and set annual goals every year. In the You know, it evolves, I think, every year, depending on who's on the council and what their thoughts or process are. Years ago, it was, you know, specific tasks that could be accomplished in that one year and then delegated to individual groups to work on or staff. And then that sort of morphed over the years to be, I think, more broad in their goal setting and more bigger picture kind of things. And so
broad is good if you're like in a phase, like if you're going to say, okay, from 2021 to 2024, we're going to, you know, do this, because then you, just what I'm kind of seeing at a high level is you kind of have some reliance on, well, this needs to be done before you can really do that. Mm-hmm. And so if the community were to come to TAB and say, well, why didn't you do this? Well, we kind of needed this to be done first, I think. So I didn't know how the city approached that, or the city council goals were approached.
Yeah, and I my understanding, of course, Mary can speak, or Jerry can speak to all this, is that there's, like I said, these bigger sort of picture, you know, things, not, you know, smaller and more visioning than certain specific tasks, you know, like, you know, operational tasks. And so it's not like, you know, have the TAB do a, you know, public, you know, hearing on transit, or it's not a specific thing like have TriMet come to a TAB meeting. It's more bigger, and I think that gives the TAB more flexibility in how they pursue it. But I leave it to you guys to.
And the thing that I would add is, I think we did these in February, mm-hmm. before the storm or after the storm.
No, this was after. This was, yeah.
Okay, so we had
a 2-day.
Three new council members. A relatively new mayor, well, a new mayor, but a mayor who had been in a council member role, and a city manager who had been there 4 months, 5 months, going through an ice storm. So, and all on the internet. So it was a process that was we will do better next time, because there won't be a pandemic, right?
Right.
It'll just be something else.
But I do think that we came away with broad strokes of things, and I think Lance is exactly right that if the TAB explores tactical ways to accomplish them, you know, I think would be appreciative.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, some of the things, sorry, one last thing, I mean, I was just talking to Lance today about, there was like something in there about an intercity shuttle, and I know that that's just sort of been talked about long before I got here too, so I think, you know, I just said to Lance, like, you must have transportation data out there somewhere, and there might be just things in here that cross over with some of the SAP stuff that we talked about at the last meeting, so I don't know, I'm excited by it.
Yeah, they're exciting, but they're huge things to chew on.
Make no little plans. They can't stir men's hearts, right? They want to burn them, Chicago.
I'm also interested in if we can talk about, like, you know, at the end of the last year, I mean, the goals are good, and they are a 50,000-foot view for 2021, but looking at what we, like, what's in here from what we passed off last year, like, where are we at on that?
Right.
And who's got that? Because there's things that are really out of our purview as an advisory board. I mean, like, even discussing, you know, like, the having TAB lobby TriMet, that's not really our role. That's a staff role.
Council. If there's an opportunity for us to layer in on that, but
we can't. But I mean, before we get there, like, I mean, can we look back at what we handed off of the things of all the work that we did leading up? There was a lot of work that went in, and a lot of thought that went into what we handed forward. And it'd be great to know where we are with that. Right.
Which I think I asked them added here. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact is, we almost do it backwards. They ask us to give a report and put goals together, but really the council sets the goals, and then we're a group that feeds into that. So we kind of did it backwards because
we
that's the
do
way
it
the
backwards.
Process. Well, I mean, really, our goals should be a part of what they do. And we did ours first because we're supposed to submit an annual report every year, and part of that report says, what are you going to do next year? In reality, what we do next year should feed. Now, maybe if this is a long-term goal thing, it'll actually work better because now next year we'll start figuring out how whatever we're going to do feeds into this. And but you're right, Kim, and I'd ask Lance to talk about where we were on these.
Because as a board since 2016, when we updated the transportation master plan, that's what you're working off of, mm-hmm. right? You're working off the master plan. And we spent the last, what is it, 2 years to get the master plan that hopefully is adopted? You know, for
the concept plans. Yeah.
The concept plans. I mean, that we have been working into that, which prioritizes your project. So, this is not out of thin air. The stuff we handed forward
no,
to council to review is meaningful of the things that were priorities within those master plans.
Is that archived somewhere on the city site or this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so and that, and I think some clarification, you know, I think certainly the annual report could use improvement, and I think Jerry's, you know, dialed into that on the new council. I think that the last year's annual report really was good at identifying the accomplishments of the group and the challenges, and then when we're setting 2021 goals, what we're really doing is saying to the city council as an advisory board that these are the things that we think we should be working on in 2021.
But we're doing that with staff. I mean, it's not mm-hmm. just the citizens, but we're doing that with your advising of here's what we can do as a city and here's where we're at. And, you know, so it's a joint effort to bring...
Well, can I chime in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're on, so just feel free...
Yeah.
Kevin or Andrew or anybody else to hop in on the conversation.
I tend to agree with Kim. I do feel that we have a lack of vision in terms of, you know, what is it? There's nothing tangible in terms of a vision that I can feel that we're driving towards. I mean, what we've been dealing with over the last 4 years is a lot of, as Kim pointed out, I mean, we put quite a lot of work into this, but it's been fairly disjointed. And sometimes I feel that that's because maybe we don't have a vision, a true vision that we're aiming towards, an end goal that we're trying to achieve.
I mean, I noticed at least a couple of ours in here show up in their goals, the safe routes to school.
Yeah.
That's one. And goal number four is done. And,
five is not. Four is.
Four is, right.
Five's a hot potato.
Yeah. And,
but like, safe routes to school, I mean, like, it'd be great to know who, I mean, is there somebody at the city? Because the person that was managing that left. So, you know, I mean, that kind of stuff. But, I mean,
well, Lance, maybe you can just go through the set. That's where we're at with these seven that we've got on our list.
So, yeah.
One is, you know, you're doing one.
But. Yeah, I think.
Didn't one get approved?
On this list.
So on the proposed goals from the TAB for 2021, pavement maintenance management program approval. Well, I think that's certainly ongoing. We had a update to our from our consultant on our pavement management report that I think was presented to both this group as well as the council. And we continue to work forward on that. I think having the budget done now for the next 2 years will help us formulate and staff to work on prioritization and organization of where our pavement management dollars will be going in the future. So I anticipate a future meeting of the TAB to include on the agenda what we're planning on doing over the next couple of years, and then have the group comment on that and make a recommendation. The goal two, of course, we as staff continue our partnerships with all the groups represented here relative to the I-205 tolling project. And like you said, that sort of filters up and has been captured in
and their goal number.
These goals. Yeah, so I think I saw something here about
tolling. Advocate against I-205 tolling.
Is that up higher?
So under council initiatives, maybe.
Oh yeah, number one.
Yeah. And then pursue regional, state, federal funding for Highway 43 and all Mount Falls improvements. That's all in the same one.
Yeah. So that is something that we continue to work on at the staff level.
It'd be great to know what that looks like, because this, that's a big train coming down the tracks, do you have enough hands on deck? Because we were severely unrepresented in this project from the get-go in the region. Maybe not right now, but like what does that look like? And do you need us to testify somewhere? And
he has sent out notices asking us to testify, right?
Yeah, but I mean, like, what can the community? I mean, community-wide, this is way bigger than us now.
Oh, yeah.
And I just got my Envision Sustainability certification, which is like LEED for infrastructure. And one of the critical questions they ask is, does your project impact what's next to it? This is a big yes. This is like you solved a problem and made 10 more. So it's a big topic, but I'd love to know more what this looks like, because you can't be an army of one or two to take on a regional impact in a concentrated area.
Yeah, I think this is a great example of one that, is, like you said, more than the TAB. It's not like the advisory board is going to take on tolling, right? But I think
it's not out of our hands.
I think the TAB, as well as some of the other advisory boards, certainly has a hand in outreach and the grassroots efforts that we put together for following up with tolling. So what we do at the staff level is work with our lobbyists and management to advocate the positions of the city council, and then when there are opportunities, certainly we want to keep the advisory boards informed of what those positions are and how to make an impact and how to speak. One of the things that I've noticed with big regional projects is you get a lot of staff input from a ton of different agencies, particularly the tolling project. But a lot of times what makes or break a decision at a place like the Oregon Transportation Commission is often the grassroots folks that come out and testify directly to like the OTC. So it's my goal to keep you guys informed on that grassroots level, so that you can have that kind of impact for the community and what everybody's advocating for.
And how do we pass that information on to the community? Because there's things I know that I'd like to share, but it's like, this message isn't coming from me. It's a lot easier to share a message from the city, or how, what do you need to do? Because, even if you talk about the environmental impacts, they're doing the NEPA permitting right now, right? Well, the emissions from congestion on 205 didn't magically evaporate. They just got pushed into neighborhoods next to people's homes. So this is, it'd be great to know how to share this with the community. So not just us, but the people who really, it impacts everybody that lives here and our businesses. And I'm sure you're enjoying navigating this.
Well, and that's, these are exactly the kinds of reasons why I had advocated to Jerry and the council to add another outreach communications person just to the public works staff. Because when you have these mega type projects, that's not something that you can just internalize with existing staff. And so we're out.
Are you able to fill your openings with everything that's going on?
So we just posted the position that Lance is referencing.
Right, which is a new one.
Mm-hmm.
But are you able to, even with your current FTE, are you able to get those positions staffed?
We are fully staffed. I mean, even the, like Kim had mentioned, the one staff engineer that left to take a position at PBOT, we filled that position. We had another vacancy, and we filled that with this very great engineer that's new for us, with good experience from Southern California. We also had a GIS position, an asset management tracking position that we just filled in with a GIS individual who had a lot of experience in the Bend area, and he's moving here this month. So I think we've had a lot of success in recruiting, and I think that has to do with a lot of factors, quite honestly. But you know, from the city being a desirable place to live, even in light of the Portland stuff and the natural disaster stuff that we've been dealing with, it's still a very desirable place. I think we do a good job of making sure our pay is in alignment with other communities, and I think our benefits and hybrid work schedules, as long with our 980 work schedule, all helps us attract and retain some good people. And not to say that people don't come and go, but so far we haven't had the same issues that I had 2 years ago, a couple years ago, pre-pandemic. I had to hire headhunters to get an entry-level engineer because it was fully, you know, there were jobs everywhere and a lot of competition for employees. But so far this year, we've, I think, done pretty well. I mean, we're recruiting for an emergency operations position right now.
We just closed that, and
how many applicants?
That were, three, I think.
Yeah.
Well, getting them filled and getting them to pick up the ball that whoever left sat down is another
goal. But I mean, just in terms of perspective, I mean, how much of your time over the past, since February, has spent on emergency management?
Yeah.
150%.
50% on that, 50% on operations, 50% on capital projects.
Nice.
So, right.
So, that's our city engineer.
Right.
So, okay, so back to this.
But can I come back to goal two? So would it be helpful if I just chat with Jules about getting all the places that she's spoken or testified with regard to 205 or all the multiple transportation committees that she's involved with?
Yes. Okay. Well, I mean, just so we know, like, who's on deck, because there's a lot of places to be. I was just talking to an engineer that works for a small city nearby that used to work for Portland that was blown away by the gaping gap of representation from the areas being impacted by the tolling. I mean, people outside the city are like, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you guys weren't included in the early conversations. Everybody else was. I mean,
and that's a tactic. I mean, that's a regional play. I mean, people see tolling as a regional issue, but like you said, I think some of those early conversations were more bigger and broader because they included tolling on I-5 and region and maybe even all ODOT facilities statewide that are freeways. And so, I mean, there's this sort of bigger, broader context. When you get to the conversation of diversion, which hasn't really started yet, and impacts and diversion mitigation, that's, I think, really where the local groups really rise. And then you get into, you know, how do you handle that if you do have tolling, and what does that look like?
Who's the city JPAC representative from Clarkson?
That's really the question. Is that Jules?
Oh, it is?
No. Well, that's the city's rep, but we don't have a direct chair on JPAC because we're a small city.
Right.
So I believe right now the JPAC rep for Clackamas County is, of course, the county who has, I believe, a permanent seat on JPAC. And then I think for the cities, I can't remember if it's Wilsonville or maybe Happy Valley. I'd have to look. It is supposed to rotate. So I know for a long time LO was sort of the rep, but a lot of that is, you know, time management for the elected officials and
worked in a city that fought for that. If you get a chance, you need to do it because it's so impactful for transportation.
Big time.
Yeah. So I mean, you can't pass our turn up. I mean, we did one time, and trying to get it back was almost impossible. So when it's our turn, somebody else to step up.
You know, Jody was the impact rep for a long time, and she rose to, I think, vice chair or something, or chair. But impact, you know, they don't handle, they handle like land use and zoning and bigger, you know, softer content. The real decision making is actually at JPAC. And so knowing how Metro works is also a big challenge for the city.
So you're getting this other position. I mean, I know that sort of the larger cities, they always have somebody showing up at those meetings from the staff. Do you guys have somebody showing up at the JPAC meet now?
No, we don't have the bandwidth for that.
Yeah, I know. That's too bad.
And that's where, you know, the way that, and of course, for people that don't know, what they're talking about at JPAC and IMPAC is Metro and the Metro Association of Governments and the MPO. Metro is actually two things. Metro is our local sort of land use overseer. They also oversee the zoo, of all weird things. They all oversee
venues
like the convention center, as well as solid waste. But the other function that Metro has is being our MPO and a Metro Island Planning Organization that funnels federal dollars through the Portland metro area. JPAC is the primary group that is the decision-making group on where most of our transportation dollars and most of our transportation regional funds get allocated through. And so having a voice at JPAC is, as the people that are aware of Metro, is really critical. I think Metro, for all of its talk of equity and inclusion, actually does just the opposite. And they actually often do what I can see happening in a lot of the Oregon area, is they give voices to people who have voices. And so special interests show up that pay lobbyists to come to those organizations and those meetings, while the small communities that don't have special lobby and special staff dedicated to that get left in the cold. And so, you know, very different. I actually would say that the Phoenix MPO is actually much more inclusive than the Portland Metro MPO, because at the Phoenix MPO, small cities had the same vote as the city of Phoenix. Mm-hmm. So they gave huge deference to small cities because the small cities all had a seat at the table, and they got a vote. So, you know, it was a very different dynamic than Portland Metro, where Portland pretty much
runs the show.
Runs the show. Right? So that's a whole other conversation that we're not going to solve today.
But people advocating for this don't live here.
Right.
I mean, the people who are on the equity committees, the people who are on different committees aren't here. You know, and all the people saying, go, do it, don't live here.
Well, and that's why we need to spend the time with our other cities here in Clackamas County to get on the same boat we are.
Right.
Okay, let's move on.
Goal 3.
Goal 3, continue.
Where are we at on the, I mean, like...
Cities here, I'm not putting you in.
Well, there was that housing group, the committee that had formed for House Bill 2001. Are they done, or are they still meeting?
HB 2001 is ongoing. That's in the planning role.
The committee that we have that was formed from different citizens in West Lynn to work
This is saying, I think planning staff is still engaged in that process. I'm
survey not too long ago that we got.
Yeah.
Reporting them the tidings, what the results were. Received.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting one because, you know, HB 2001 sort of impacts so many things, not just transportation. But it's almost like the Main Street project. Like it hits on pretty much every advisory board and every group. So I think that would be a great one for maybe Mary to champion to the council on which advisory board should be the point leader on HB 2001. And is that, particularly as an advisory board, because while we have the Planning Commission and the City Council, they are the sort of the legislative regulatory groups of the community. So, you know, you don't want them to be sort of almost biased before they even have a vote. You almost want one of the existing advisory boards to sort of be the point on that, and that could be economic development, it could be
or jointly,
it could be any, it could be DEI, I mean it could be a lot of different groups that could be pointing you know, be the point group on HB 2001.
But it's a biggie. I mean that's why we had it on there, is because it's long, it's what our committee is going to look like in the future. So mm-hmm.
Like CCI, because don't they do planning stuff?
Yeah, citizen engagement and how that works, but they're typically more in the nuts and bolts of the code versus
okay.
the
right.
big picture land use kind of things, okay. where you're talking about the end of single family home zoning and the creation of duplexing as the smallest unit of measure now as part of HB 2001. So
that's fun for infrastructure too.
Right.
You're right. Like it's not just on the map, right? It's the things leading up to it, and the water, and the sewer, and the
right. Yeah, utilities. Even the utility advisory board is impacted by HB 2001.
Yes,
so that one is a big question mark. I think goal 4, Willamette Falls Drive back in parking. Done. So a final decision was made, and that so we can scratch that one.
Yay!
Unless somebody wants to bring back
in. No, it's done. It's over.
It's done.
Well, I can say that I've been hearing a lot of people, just the general public, all of a sudden reaching out to me personally about that. Who apparently had no idea we were talking about that or even thinking about it. And I don't know if anyone is a part of the Westland community page on Facebook, but people are way focused on the bike aspect of it and not the overall thing.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. That's an issue with the community a lot, I think.
All right.
Absolutely.
I agree. The back end parking, since that has been reversed, seems to have settled down, and now the conversation is about the separation of the bike lanes and sidewalks and tripping hazards and everything that goes along with that, which we're actively working on as well.
Lance, how bad has that tripping issue been recently?
It depends on who you talk to. I think it's still a big concern. I mean, obviously, we're trying to build infrastructure that is safe and accessible, and so... but when you're dealing with multiple different types of users and multiple grade changes and lots of different competing interests, it gets technically challenging. Actually, as a side note, I had mentioned that I had a presentation today, actually, to the National ITE conference, which is the Institute of Transportation Engineers. And I was one of the speakers, and I was presenting on Willamette Falls Drive to about 250 different transportation professionals in the entire U.S. and Canada who are interested in this subject. And there's a lot there. I mean, I only had so much time to cover it, but there, you know, we're definitely in the mix and getting feedback from other places and other areas and trying to figure out how to accomplish these things. So I think we're right on the cutting edge, if you will, of transportation and mixed use areas like the downtown area with the, or the Main Street area with the bike and ped and parking and, you know, competing interests. So more to come on that one.
I think the biggest thing coming up that I keep hearing repeatedly is people wondering if there's any litigation regarding the tripping hazard. Not that that needs to be commented on specifically, but whether or not there is any, because I know several incidences where people were transported in ambulances, which is usually something that results in some sort of lawsuit. So is there anything you can speak to about that?
I am not aware of any litigation that the city is involved in to date. Of course, if you're familiar with litigation in the state of Oregon, I think people have several years to file a claim, and so.
Yeah.
But there also has to be a notion of, you know, if you're filing a claim in public right of way, there has to be a what's the word? You know, the city attorney can comment on this better than I can, but there has to be some sort of
you have to demonstrate some pattern of negligence.
Yeah, like some sort of not negligence, but like knowledge and that there is a demonstrated problem. So, for example, typical claims in the right of way would be a heaved up sidewalk and somebody trips and falls. Now, if the city didn't have prior knowledge of that and didn't do anything about it, or if the city had prior knowledge and didn't do anything about it, then that'd be a legitimate claim. But the claims get very complicated, particularly in the public right-of-way, because it's actually the adjacent property owner that has the liability, not the city. And so anybody with a claim would actually be suing the adjacent property owner. So it gets into those issues. And in this case, it's not something like there's a hazard that was constructed inappropriately. In this case, everything was constructed within federal and state code requirements. What's different is the bikes are on the inside of the parking lane instead of on the street side of the parking lane. So the problem that we have is what I refer to, and Jerry knows this, as heuristics, where people make the assumption that the bike lane is the sidewalk, and it's not. It's actually just part of the street.
Right.
And so I think that's where we get into those issues of what is and isn't. So I would anticipate with any new development or any new infrastructure like this, eventually you would have litigation because it's new and different. And then odds are they're not going to win the claim because of it meets all the code requirements. and the city's actively pursuing remedies to those issues where we've put in temporary bollards. We're actually working right now on saw cutting some of the lower curbs to make it a smoother transition so it's less of a trip hazard.
You demoed that, right?
Yeah.
Right. And just anecdotally, it seems like the bollards have actually done something to reduce all the things I've heard about.
Yeah. And
people telling me what they've observed.
Yeah, and there's just so much going on there, right? I mean, with COVID, we had the bike lane taken over by outdoor seat dining because of the, others, because they couldn't dine indoors, and we wanted to support the businesses. So I think there's a lot that's happening there, and we need time to work through it. I know people would like to see stuff immediately, but unfortunately, it took us. You know, it takes a lot of time to get that done in a way that's, really thoughtful and best fit of public funds. So I think there's more to come, like I said there, and that we'll be continuing to have that conversation at the TAB. And certainly would invite anybody in the public to come to a TAB meeting to share their voice. One of the things
so,
I've...
So we have...
Sorry, Lance. Mm-hmm. Do we have a track of numbers? I mean, are the incidents getting less, or is it kind of maintaining itself, or are we tracking the number of reported incidents?
That's an interesting point, because nobody has come to the city, to my knowledge, claiming they had an accident. The only reports that we have been third party, from people saying they've seen an accident. And so, you know, it's interesting, because we track vehicle accidents, because by state law, all vehicle accidents that result in an injury have to have a report, and a report is made, and the police take the report, and everything's tracked. In a single pedestrian incident where there's no other party involved, there is no tracking of that through any kind of state system or mandate. And so unless somebody comes forward to the city and tells us that they had an issue, everything we're getting is third party or hearsay. And so you may get somebody reporting something, but it could be the same. It could be 30 different people reporting about the one single incident. And so, right. And of course, in those instances, very few, I think I've only heard of a couple, reported directly to the city that were third-party reports. Most of the reporting that we, you know, that anybody here may be aware of is probably through social media, which doesn't necessarily get reported directly to the city. I don't have Facebook, so I don't know about these issues, and so I'm relying on other people to give me that information, and then we're sitting there questioning, like, you know, I saw a lady trip when I was out at the farmer's market one day, and she just tripped on the flat sidewalk. I mean, there was nothing at all. She just lost her footing, and so. You know, it gets really tough. You know,
it's super difficult. And you're right; it's new, and it's going to take a while to bed down. But have we put a message out?
Andrew, let's get back to our goals. We're kind of off track here. Let's finish our goal setting. We have our CIP coming out. So
yeah, it certainly sounds like something that could be on a future agenda.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
So sidewalk code review.
That's a big one. I don't know if that's buried somewhere in here under livability or affordability. I think maybe examine civic infrastructure needs is probably a catch-all for that, but that would be a good question to the council as to what we would like to work on.
Isn't that a biggie in your office on a regular basis? Having consistency between neighborhoods.
Well, not only do we have inconsistencies between neighborhoods, we have inconsistencies in the thoughts on how to interpret the existing code, and so
that takes a lot of staff time.
Yeah.
So what would it take for us to achieve this goal? What do you need to do?
Well, I would say, if this is something that the TAB would like to take up, share that with Mary, who can report back to council, and you know, is this have
do you
the council direct the advisory board on what to work on?
I mean, like, do you want it to stay the way it is, or would you like it to have some results?
You don't get the complaints. Do you want to take it up?
Is this exactly what we were talking about earlier today, too?
Yes.
Okay.
You're probably talking about this on a weekly basis.
Well, I mean, can we just direct?
And that gets into the advisory board role.
Say, like, let's just do this?
Yeah, that's the question. Yeah. Do we need to do anything? We're saying it ought to be a goal. Do you guys?
You
so what do you
do
need
it,
from us? We'll do
so
it.
So, I mean, I don't want to, well, I will interject.
You guys can
sorry,
have
it. I'll just
you know, how much do you want to deal with it?
I brought it up to Lance today, and I was like, you know, I run through Robinwood, and, like, there's a sidewalk here, and there's a new house here. Yep. And, like, and I said to Lance, when I came in, there were other things that were a little bit higher priority levels. So it's like, it's always bugged me, and I'm not sure why it is. And I talked to him briefly about it today. I was like, we should do something about this, because, you know, I mean.
So the sidewalk stuff, at least the ordinance part and the land use changes, potential land use code changes in the CDC, are on the radar of planning staff. And they are, as my understanding, working on it as part of their docket of items. I think it really gets into prioritization of the docket, and then once they get to something that makes sense at the staff level, I can certainly share that information with the TAB so that you guys can have input and a recommendation to council on what that would look like. So I think it's being worked on. It's just, where is it in the priority list of other things?
Were we also talking about creating something where we said what streets needed to have sidewalks?
Or it's specific on the map. Like, if this neighborhood is this, and the, because even in Willamette, there was two houses that were within two blocks within a year, and they had two different profiles. the curb profile was, and they're still standalone, right?
Yeah,
and
then they're never going to get redone.
And the sidewalks, it's like, they're never going to get redone. Like, this was within a year.
Right.
So, like, maybe I'm just too nerdy, but I'm like, they're different profiles. So you...
So we've had it on...
How do you manage that?
This is a goal we'd like to see accomplished because it helps move people through our city and on the pedestrian piece of it. So there's other groups working on it. We've made it, but there's really nothing for us to do until it gets to the point where we do something except to say we'd like to see you guys do the sidewalk code.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, do you need our help on this?
What do you need from us? And we're really a review group that then advises the city council.
I mean, how would a map or
map would be
the streets, how would we go about developing that? I don't know.
Well, I think that's where a group like this comes into play. So I think you've got a couple things. You've got staff working on code, competing, that code time is... part of the docket, but it's also that they've got other stuff going on like HB 2001, and so they're balancing their time on that end of things and comparing what our code is to surrounding community codes and doing that kind of research right now. And then once that sort of gets to a resting point, if it's decided that a map is the way to go, then I'm sure a group like TAB would be tasked with commenting on that map and what it would look like. I think Jerry and I had this conversation earlier today of if you had areas that didn't like, let's say, a low volume cul-de-sac where you really don't need a sidewalk, would a low volume cul-de-sac in a new development or existing neighborhood where a house is being rebuilt, would that pay a fee in lieu that would go to a sidewalk construction fund to fill in the gaps between other new developments that where we do want a sidewalk? I mean, all this comes to play, and then there's some legal review on what we can legally charge for that or what makes sense. So I think it's sort of a bigger task, but
this group, before I got on here, didn't they vote on something about this? Wasn't there some policy questions that came before the TAB that they voted on?
Yes, and I don't think
a recommendation
they didn't like them?
No.
Oh.
A recommendation was made to the council at the time, who's not the current council, and it didn't really get out of council.
None of those recommendations also. Nor did those recommendations get folded into the work these people are, the folks that are working on it now at the staff level.
Well, they have that back information, but they're also, sort of, every new council has its own dynamic.
So, can I grab that and bring it to council myself and maybe
Okay, good. I mean, those are all things.
I just want, on a residential level, I just want to know why this house has a sidewalk. The one next to it does it.
Or one that goes.
I just want to know.
If you go back to the way the cities were done, everybody had to do a half street improvement. When you put in that one little house, you had to do your whole thing, even though it's all developed around you and it's never going to get there. The thought always was, well, when the city actually does it, that's one less stretch of sidewalk and curb they have to put in. But you got to look at the reality of it. And so I think that's what.
But we've got busy streets too, like 19th Street. I brought this up before. Where somebody, they built two new houses where they tore down little houses and put in big ones, and they paid fee in lieu, so it's gravel, and there was sidewalk on either side. So it's like, what's up with that? A lot of people use this for walking, and they're within the last 2 years. So it's like, okay, no sidewalk there, in a busy.
Well, and that was part of the prior council's direction to staff was the interpretation of the CDC, and they said at that time, And there was some pending developments, particularly down in the Robinwood area, that where they said, no, we're not going to require sidewalk construction in front of tear down and rebuilds of single-family homes. And so...
But then it translates to a different area that there is sidewalk.
So, and yeah, and so while it may have made sense at that particular location, because you've made this broad-based policy across the city, now there's not being sidewalk built in a place where it would make sense to have a sidewalk, which is the point of the map.
Yes.
Right? But...
Okay, so you're going to...
That is what we were given, so that's where we're at.
We had this conversation 3 hours ago.
Right.
You're
going
to
get him what we
want. You're going to keep having
me. It's
been going on for years.
I just don't get it.
2016, when Kittleson came in to help us with our transportation system plan, they're like, you guys have the most inconsistent goals.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, so that's... what about safe routes to school? That's actually on the council goal.
Who's working on that with the city? Do you have a staff person?
Yes, we are active. So the safe routes to school projects, you know, of course, we already have the safe routes to school maps of each school. The school district holds those on their website. The city worked with the school district on all the development of that. The city also earmarked money out of the GEO bond to build, constructing safe route to school improvements. The city pre-COVID went to every neighborhood association, and we've got a list of potential safe route projects. Of course, there's always way more projects than there is funding, and so each neighborhood has given us their priority project. And that is completed at this point. The city staff, engineering staff, that's our newest staff engineer, has been working on the design of some of those projects. Unfortunately, a lot of those projects come with a lot of challenges because some of them impact private property. A lot of the streets are not centered correctly in the right of way, and so you know, the question becomes, do we acquire more right of way or do we recenter the old street? Some of those, most of those projects also have other issues surrounding them, like the sidewalk that we're currently working on next to Sunset School. Before we can do that work, we have to do the sewer work on that street because the sewer line is shot and needs to be replaced. And so we're currently, she just completed the design of the sewer line that we're getting ready to go out to bid on for construction this fall, so that then in the spring we can go out to bid on the sidewalk work. And so all of that is in progress. We actually completed the handicap ramps at Hidden Springs and Suncrest, where we're planning to install a flashing RRFB at that intersection. That sort of went by the wayside in COVID because there were no kids in the school. But it's also now being, we've tried to pair that with the 10th Street project because we're doing another RFB with that project. So our goal was to have all the RFBs installed maybe at the same time. We're still looking at that. We might bring the other one forward so that it could be available this
fall.
So a lot, and of course there's lead times on everything. Apparently it takes, you know, a year to get a door or a 2x4 nowadays, so depending on the time that you order it. But we continue to see movement on all those projects. I anticipate they'll all move ahead over the course of the next couple of years.
So is there anything that we need to do as an advisory and policy decisions that we need to take a look at and advise the council on?
Because I don't think as a city we've publicly done their twice a year events. They have an event in October and they have an event in May. And, you know, but even though that would be in schools, that would still be great to be a community advertised. You know, so people are watching out for kids. It's a national program. I mean, Safe Routes to School is an education program. It's not infrastructure. We're adding infrastructure to it.
Right.
But it'd be great to know how we can support your staff person in promoting this for the first time, I think.
Yeah, so.
As a citywide level, hey, I think it's the first week of October or something. Of this is the day we're all watching the school. So people have an awareness that the kids are doing this and.
And
yeah,
and typically it's the school district that does that kind of outreach, not the city, because they are dialed in with each individual school, each individual principal, the PTA, all those groups. They design the routes. We support from an infrastructure standpoint, but from a education and sort of a active leadership role, it's really the school district that does that. I'm hoping that our new community, one of the other jobs of the citizen engagement person that we'll be hiring will also be active transportation and active transportation education, which would include not just bike and pet bike, but also safe routes and schools. So I'm hoping that that person is able over their first year to develop a working relationship with the school district and start having those kinds of conversations. But not really a role of the TAB, but certainly something that the staff is working on.
But it does tie back into when we do get into prioritizing the infrastructure. We had talked about that before. I think you had $1 million of money put towards safe routes. You have $11 million of requests. And the question was which schools are actively promoting kids walking. And I think it's also important for the community, because if it's safe for kids, it's safe for everybody else. Like if you see where the kids are walking, like, hey, maybe that's how I should head this way if I was walking too.
Okay. City website? Sorry, that was our last
call. Yep.
What is that? Well, just resources, the things that we're talking about are where to find things. I mean, the city website's a little funky. I still do better doing a general Google search than doing a search in the city website to find things. But so that people can find the documents like you were talking about, where's the goals.
So is this a problem overall with the city's website?
Probably, but
So I'll tell you, I brought this, so we're hiring an additional communications person, right? And so I created a list of items that our current communications team can work on now that their time will be freed up a little bit. And I said, I hear about the website, right? And I was like,
daily, right?
And they said, we just redesigned. And I
I was one of the people that tested it one night at the library. And I don't know, I'm not saying I have a rational mind necessarily, but I was able to
make it work.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good experience when I went through it. So,
good.
I think it was an improvement over the old website.
Yeah.
It's not so much for me. Like if I know something's there, I'm like, where is this buried? But if I was trying to, somebody stops me on the street and says, hey, where do I find this? I want to send the link. I'm like, oh, I know it's here. How do I?
So we've made that recommendation to council. We have issues with the website to find transportation. Okay, well, there you go.
What sort of transportation is there?
Well, things like, especially for multimodal. I think we talked before, there's the North by Northwest connector, which connects different transit agencies throughout the state. So it's got Amtrak, it's got TriMet, where you can travel without a car, or so say you were taking Amtrak and you can get back. Anything that would help connect our city and for tourism, that gets people here as a resource. The North by Northwest connector is pretty cool. Because we're in a serious transit desert. So, what options do we have?
I guess that's one of our goals we're supposed to work on, is lobbying TriMet for additional routes.
So that gets
get busy.
No kidding.
No pressure.
We have absolutely zero clout.
Right.
At least the council has some clout.
Right.
We have none. More of a, for us would be to monitor it, but So we have these, we actually have something in the council goals that we're supposed to do. That's one of them. And we're supposed to consider an intercity transit or shuttle options, which would take some staff time to develop
right.
what those are. So Lance, you got that on your...
But what was that, Lance, did you share that idea that you had earlier with me? With
yeah, so transit obviously is part of the transportation system plan. I think it makes sense for transit to be in the wheelhouse of the Transportation Advisory Board. But like you said, the wording on this particular goal three, number one, is probably not the best. I mean, certainly the TAB would have a role in the process of transit as an advisor to the council, but they wouldn't be actively lobbying or doing those tasks. Those tasks would be assigned to others. The city, you know, it is interesting. I think probably one of the things I would say is that we've been, as a community, so overwhelmed with other things that whether it's, you know, the Fesser or DEI or police or storms or, you know, COVID. I mean, there's so much that has been hitting us that this maybe fell through the cracks. And when I see this goal on here, I'm sort of like, we need to do better at educating the community and our council on what we are or have been working on as a region, and getting more of those regional players like Clackamas County and TriMet in front of the council to and the community to show them what has been worked on, so that people know that, you know, this is not just a void. There's actually a inner city shuttle options study that was completed by Clackamas County that included Oregon City, West Lynn, and Tualatin in that shuttle study, but that was also completed sort of during COVID, so you probably didn't hear about it. And TriMet, we actually have been lobbying TriMet, not necessarily for additional routes, but the modification of route, I can never remember the name. I want to say it's 154.
154.
Yeah, modification of 154 to where it wouldn't just go from Oregon City to West Lynn Willamette, but go from Oregon City to Willamette, across the hill, over to Tualatin, and then back over the same path. And so, you know, that was actually one of the options that was talked about in the shuttle study. Shuttles are a little different. When you're talking TriMet, and I think all of transit is sort of struggling through COVID and post-COVID to understand their role. Actually, at the ITE conference, there was a conversation about that, and one of the leaders of the U.S. Transit Agency was saying that, you know, we may not just be doing 40-foot long buses anymore. It may be a whole host of different things. And so, you know, what does that look like? And how do you change something that is intentionally very static? And the reason it's so static is people want assurance that, you know, that stop is going to be there and they can count on it to get to and from work every day. And so modifications to transit obviously create a whole issue, and COVID just upended the whole system. So I think there's a lot of work to be done there.
So you'll be able to answer that one at the end of the year.
You know, and I think obviously we rely on TriMet to come to the council and come to these groups and show that they're engaged and that they're doing outreach with this community. And, you know, putting somebody from TriMet on the spot at a council meeting sounds like something that probably should be added to a future agenda at some point.
Fair enough.
So, has anybody seen the article about the Oregon City shuttle, connector shuttle?
Yeah, and there's another Oregon City shuttle that goes to their industrial park.
That so this was just in the news. I mean, I just happened to run across it.
Well, it's just starting.
Yeah, I think that was one. Yeah, I saw that, but it was for the industrial section, mm-hmm. right, for people.
Yeah, it goes up to the unincorporated, I think, area of, is it 213 or something
oh,
like
I
that?
Oh, I see.
But, I mean, it was like a job kind of shop.
Right.
Because there's a lot of businesses
there. Well, yeah. I have a question. I just have to, I'm sorry to interrupt, but so what is the perception that Transportation Advisory Board members don't have clout? Why not? Why not go to, I mean, I went to that Clackamas County Transportation open house at Abernethy, remember? Mm-hmm. When was that? 2019?
Yeah. Pre-COVID.
And during public comment, I just stood up and said, you know, we need more options for public transportation in Westland because the perception is everybody has a car, but that's not actually very progressive or true. But I'm just wondering, like, why... And I'm not, this isn't like to put somebody on the spot. I'm just saying, am I missing something? Because regular people who are volunteering their time have a lot of good things to say.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. And I think it comes with the word of definition of lobbying.
It's not the same.
There's lobbying.
We can't, because we're an advisory body to you folks.
Okay.
And so we don't have any ability to speak other than as individuals. I mean, you could say, well, I'm a member of Westland's Transportation Advisory Board, but I don't speak on behalf of the board, and I don't speak on behalf of the city of Westland. I just speak on my own. And, you know, maybe...
It waters it down
true.
A bit.
That's true.
Know?
And I guess lobbying maybe is the wrong word.
You're a counselor, so you clearly have... You can't speak for the council, but you can certainly speak as a counselor, and that carries a lot more weight.
Lance, I have a quick question, if you don't mind.
But just a second, Andrew. I was just going to chime in here that I still think, though, that grassroots level effort is important.
Right. In addition to we can.
Right.
If you're going to be there, let us know. Like, great.
That's
right.
What we shouldn't.
We'll go together.
When we need a group, this is a good group to go.
We're going to take public transport.
Okay.
Andrew, go ahead.
Thanks, Lance. It's not the first time I've mentioned this, but I just wondered, have we done any studies at all that look at transit on the river between here and Portland or something of that nature? And if not, I mean, is that something that we could start looking at?
There is a company that's getting ready to launch one between Vancouver and downtown Portland.
Yeah,
I think I've heard that.
Is it going as far as Lake Oswego?
No, it's going to that marina there. I think you know that where that marina is down there.
There's a lot more commercial traffic in that
there
area
is,
too.
It alleviates I-5 corridor going up through there where you got the two lanes. It does a lot of good things. Like could it works.
Yep. So to answer your question, Andrew, for Westland, no, there has not been a study, to my knowledge, of river transit or transportation. Like you said, there's not a whole, I mean, we're just hearing about one for downtown Portland right now, so I think it's just unfamiliar to, you know, U.S. citizens on how that works or what that looks like. I certainly enjoyed the time that I had in Victoria, where they have the little yellow boats that take you around as little taxis. I thought that was awesome, but not something that you see in the Portland metro area for whatever reason. I don't know how their financing system works there.
This is a private company. It won't even be a government, at least at this point, until it fails. It won't be a government.
So I think there's
a really geeky story of how Portland was actually like discovered, quote unquote, and founded by some people on a boat who left our area, Oregon City, Westland, found this clearing, and then the coin toss thing happened. So it's been done in the past. We could bring it back.
I think we should. I think we should seriously look at it. It's our biggest natural resource, that horseshoe that circles us. And it's the most underutilized, from what I can see. I mean, I understand there's enormous issues. I mean, a million different agencies have got to be brought in. The locks is another story. But I really think it's time now. I mean, there's not too much we can do in our city in terms of widening roads and making huge differences for traffic, I guess, although we're trying, right? So it does make sense to see if we can alleviate some of that traffic and maybe put it on the river, or at least look towards that.
Yeah, I think the trick there is just finding the funding to, you know, really have a robust story and get other communities to partner in on that effort.
Mm-hmm. Well, we could certainly put it on a list of something that we recommend you be considered.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what we're supposed to be doing. But we ought to have a bigger discussion, and that ought to be a separate item, and mm-hmm. we got to deal with that in a different
way. Yeah. Appreciate that if you could add it on, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Well, and maybe it may be something as we're talking about that transit is we have a lot of things that are within reach. I don't think people think of Amtrak in Oregon City. I mean, you can park there for free.
Yeah, you can.
And you can go to Seattle, and yeah. you can go to Eugene. And I just passed a bus. I forgot to write the name down because I was driving, but there was some electric bus. There was a commuter bus, I think, between, I don't know if it was Seattle and Eugene. You know, there's the, what's that funny bus, that cheap bus with
The Bolt?
Yeah,
Bolt.
Yeah, Bolt. With the internet. You know, yeah. that kind of works. But, I mean, like, there's things like that. Like, where can you catch that for people that do live here? Because you see them going down the road. So I think there's things that kind of brush past us or connect with us, and how do we bolster that conversation of like, hey, how do you get to that bus stop? We're not far from Oregon City to catch Amtrak.
No.
You know.
Well, that's what I had that conversation with the public works director in Oregon City, saying, you know, why wouldn't you guys in your transportation system plan advocate to relocate the Oregon City Transit Center from the downtown to the Amtrak station?
Oh, that's
interesting. And then you could obviously certainly still have the bus that goes through downtown connecting the downtown, and a lot of the buses would feed through downtown. But if you had the multimodal opportunity, I mean, the fact that you had, even if you wanted to go on Amtrak, you still have to get a car to get to Amtrak because the buses don't run to the Amtrak station.
And we talked about
that.
Where if the bike ped bridge that went over was in alignment with the street that's closer to Amtrak, where you could ride and go.
So I think that regionally there's a lot of conversations that could still happen to facilitate better connections.
Which is the point of Metro.
Which is the point of Metro.
All right, so we went through our four. I'm going to be interested to see how you rate this up, Lance, so I know what it is.
For goals. Right. So what are we going to do for the next, right? I mean, what stands out for you when you're hearing what we have, you know, what we brought forward and the new goals from council.
That's they're very lofty. These are
really
lofty.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly there are components that could be built out and be very tactical and very okay. If nothing else, can we do these three things?
I mean, maybe that's the question that, you know, quite honestly, I just throw it back to Mary, but if this group, as an advisory board, would say, what of these sort of bigger goals, 1, 2, 3, 4, I mean, certainly the TAB is called out for transit, but what would the council like the TAB to focus on?
For advice.
And knowing that advisory boards are advisors to council, not staff.
Exactly.
I mean, you're advisors to council, you're not staff that can...
Right. It's kind of a circle where you kind of give it to us, we look at it, chew it up, and we can advise the council.
And then you put it on your calendar.
Well, and how much of these are, and I don't mean this to be mean, but how much of these are based in reality, right? I'm just saying, You said, I don't have your lingo down, but the RF, whatever the flashing light thing is, it'll take a year to get that in place. I mean, to me, when I look at this and I look at the red tape, this is a 100-year plan.
Don't get all realistic on
this. No, I'm serious. I'm giving you the humble opinion of a citizen who...
I mean, we have the goals, and typically what we don't need, but what they need as staff, or what are the tasks that have to go along with accomplishing those goals?
Correct.
We just have to give the council advice on that.
I think part of what we put together for these goals has to do with kind of a framework or a structure, a lens to make policy and decisions through as much as more than, I mean, there are some specific items, action items more, but this is, I kind of felt like when we were having these discussions and we were thinking about the DEI audit that was happening and some of the more recent challenges that the community had been facing when we were having this discussion. So, but when do we redo them? 2 years from now?
I think what we should do is take a strong look, you know, in early next year.
Yeah.
And revise these with a year under our belts and go with, you know, climate emergencies. And then I think just everybody, you know, a year under the belt, like, has a better idea of how everything's working and maybe not working and can be improved upon.
What you were saying about the direction of whether the advisory board's timing of their goal setting versus and the city council. So maybe we need to rethink the order of things, and or we look at yours and then we revisit. Chicken egg sort of thing.
Because I remember asking you, Lance, when we did ours, you know, well, when do we get started on these? And you go, well, we have to wait until the council does their goals. So that'll, which is fine. Mm-hmm. I get that. So I'm not sure.
Well, and I think the thought, or you know, was always that the end of year, you know, end of calendar year, we would, as an advisory board, say, okay, this is what we feel like we accomplished this year and what we worked on. It's just a simple sort of summary of the year, and then the goals were more aspirational of, you know, well, looking forward, you know, we think we should be working on these things. Council, tell us what we should and shouldn't. What's your priority? And the problem that I think most everybody has is everything's the priority. And so, you know, like when you know, those little dot exercises of, okay, if you were going to accomplish one thing, here's your one dot. Tell us which one. And I think in the past it was, well, I'm going to cut up my dot and put a quarter of it on each thing. You know? And so, you know, so it was like, how do you make that priority for that calendar year?
And you know what I think? I wouldn't have us do goals. I would have us identify issues for the coming year.
Yes.
And that way, the council then can take those issues that we've identified as important and decide, well, that, okay, we're going to do that within a goal. Then we don't look like we're trying to set something that, frankly, don't have a lot of control over. And but we've identified, and that was what these really are. These are key issues that we think the council needs to pay attention to. They may or may not, but that's what we think.
And it is critical timing. I mean, hand, what I'm hearing is like, well, you know, work on one or two things or just wait. Then it becomes a question of why are we meeting? You know, like, are we moving the needle anywhere? But a lot of these things that we brought forward are critical. If you put off maintenance, it's exponential, the cost of, you know, you start to get into failed pavement, now you're into a road replacement instead of maintenance. The 205 thing, that's a steam train down the back of our necks. This is unprecedented. Nobody's been told in the entire state of Oregon, and they're going to start here. It's going to affect everything here. So, I mean, I think the things we brought are timely.
Right, they're issues that need to be.
Fun issues.
But they're,
well, and I think that.
Buried in all. I mean, this is just massive.
And I think that's great to. I like the concept of issues instead of goals. And then having the council and the consultant and city management, and I may be speaking out of turn here, but you know, having everybody at the council goal setting, taking all this advice from these different advisory boards and these different issues, and then prioritizing those as a community.
Right. And then a clear mission.
And then converting the issues into what are our goals related to these issues. And then the other part of that is not just identifying them and calling it done. The other part of that is, okay, what gets assigned to staff? Where do the advisory boards factor in? Because usually it's mostly staff or consultant driven, maybe lobbyists, maybe others, maybe legal. And then identifying, okay, on these goals, what are we looking for out of each advisory board? So that gives advisory boards, you know, direction.
A little bit of direction. That's right. Okay.
Last question, while you have a moment.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks, Don. Sorry. As far as you're aware, what's the next thing coming down the pike that we've got to start digging into? I mean, we got over Main Street pretty much. What's the next thing coming down the pike towards us?
That's a good question. I would say, Main Street, will continue to be a challenge, like we've already mentioned, with the sidewalk and bicycle interaction. But I think the next big thing is probably going to be HB 2001 and how we interact with that. And right on the heels of that, which is a huge state initiative, is the tolling. I think that is another big task. I think those are big sort of regional things for the community as a whole. I don't, other than advocating, I don't know where the TAB fits in some of that. I think the big thing probably for TAB immediately is going to be giving staff direction on road resurfacing and pavement maintenance, which is our bread and butter operation, as immediate kind of things. So I see all of that as sort of next steps for us.
Can I ask you guys, I'm sorry to interrupt, but so we have a second vote coming on the Willamette Falls Drive concept plan, and I know from having gone back over our discussion from the last time we discussed it, there were some concerns about congestion and just unknown factors that could we, I mean, I know that the council would appreciate any input for our decision making, because people are struggling. So nobody that I've spoken to of other council members and have from our meeting are against multimodal transportation, but the concerns about some of the changes, especially down towards Fields Bridge, about getting that much different activity going, whether this new school potentially is there, we don't know, and then the tolling diversion, both huge X factors which are hard to anticipate. There's no way to traffic study them because we don't know. Does anybody, I mean, I'd love to hear.
We raised issues at the other end where we only put in one roundabout now as a part of the I-205 project, and we don't put the second one in, and we talked about we lose the gap that signal provides. There's almost no way that I think you're going to be able to make any of those movements without.
You're going to be stuck. People send me pictures of Stafford being stuck during rush hour. If one direction stuck, all four directions are stuck.
It's going to be bad. But we sort of raised out. We didn't see the issues at Fields at the other end down there. We didn't see those. We didn't see those.
The worst thing I think we could do is, I mean, you can't cut the bikes out of the bike in the ped improvements out of it. But particularly with the schools, it's critical to have that in there. And if we really do get the tolling the way it's designed right now, that's more important than ever to have that safe, that safety buffer. It's already sketchy riding a bike on a lot of these areas, but to do a brand new project and not have those improvements in there?
No, not have them. That's not what I was.
What's the big concern?
Part having the elements of a roundabout at the Fields Bridge, at the bridge, potentially. That's the potential
right.
Design.
Was it a roundabout at the Fields Bridge? At Dollar Street, where it comes in?
No, at Dollar Street. At the bridge.
Where Dollar Street would connect.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, where Dollar Street used
where
to come
it used
in
to
and
be,
got cut off.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes.
Is it a roundabout there?
Well, no, the Willamette Falls Drive concept plan says roundabout or other intersection, and so we showed a mini roundabout
as an option. Okay.
So when the school gets going, they'll be figuring out, okay, does, or, and we're saying school, it could be any development on that site, or it could be a future city project if the school doesn't get built, whatever.
Right.
It becomes like, there. I think, there's a whole separate study that goes on with that process.
And the school just makes a specific timing of queuing traffic, and then with some parallel parking to For the field.
Right.
And then bike and ped.
Right.
And then the backup that we know happens through there, made with additional impact of tolling diversion and school queuing. And then here comes TVFNR because they're responding to get out down to Borland Road. And these are the things that I,
so,
that
yeah, so I think that's me. When you get to the land use application of the school and the and you know, if it's the school specifically that's driving that conversation, I think that they would have to do some sort of traffic study that would show what kind of intersection would work best there. So is it a mini roundabout? Is it a two-way stop? Is it a four-way stop? I think that becomes the question
okay.
that has to be asked.
Is the level of service in the planning code, so level C or B?
Right, and so there's those level of service questions, but with Willamette Falls Drive, it gets dicey, I would say, on level of service, because the entire corridor at rush hour doesn't meet any of our level of service requirements, period.
Already.
Because you're all, because of the diversion off of I-205.
Existing.
And so it becomes more of a question of safety, not throughput, right? So it's like, how does a fire truck get where it needs to go? Or how does a kid get to school safely? Not so much, you know, how quickly can I go down Willamette Falls Drive and get to my final destination, which is what a level of service gets
right.
to. And I think that becomes the question, is not so much, you know, oh, the school's going to force us or the city's going to force us to do a mini roundabout. I think it's a question of options, right? The option is a two-way stop, a four-way stop, a mini roundabout, or a traffic signal.
So the preliminary...
How do you do it?
Right. Right. Says we're making improvements here, and then when it comes time to pursue that project, then you can fine-tune and change options.
Right. From a strictly safety standpoint, as you know, the engineer, other engineer in the room would know, the roundabout is traditionally always the safest option. And so we tend, in our transportation system plan, is that we also know the number one goal is safety. And so, you know, do we, you know, we're not adding lanes on Willamette Falls Drive to improve our level of service.
Mm-hmm.
So the question becomes, you know, how do we, you know, do improvements without, you know, adding lanes? Mm-hmm. And that's where I was, you know, I may say it jokingly, but, you know, or some others may say saying it jokingly, but if we put a, in effect, a ramp meter signal on the other side of the bridge, our level of service is fine
right.
in West Lynn. But the level of service in unincorporated Clackamas County is level of service F, because all the backup is now out on Borland Road and
right.
not in West Lynn. Because, okay. you know, that becomes like, how do you handle
so
that?
That end, I mean, we looked at the plan, we didn't look at when it would get built or how it would get phased in. And clearly, until it's built, there will be traffic issues through there, notwithstanding what happens up at
I-25.
But what it does give the city and you, obviously, is we can now tell developers what they have to do, and we make those incremental improvements.
That's why it's critical to pass
that. That's why it's critical to have.
Because it gets, mm-hmm. and this also gets you qualified for state and federal funding. If mm-hmm. this isn't adopted, you're going to watch these nice little juicy funding opportunities drive by in a bus that we're
right.
not on.
We thought the plan was
good as it's
okay.
laid out. We like the way it works and functions.
Right, in relation to like the mini roundabout, typically that's a traffic calming and safety improvement, not a level of service improvement kind of thing. And so, you know, if that wasn't in there, then that really wouldn't be an option, because the developer would just to choose two-way stop.
Right.
And that's super cheap. Right? And then they're down
in
there.
No engineering in that.
Right. There's no difficulty in design of a two-way stop. So, you know, like if you really wanted a high level of service, you just put in a two-way stop and you're done and you're super cheap. But if you're trying to improve safety and you're trying to, you know, mitigate some of these other issues that we have in town, then you're trying to be more creative. And I think that's what people might be missing is, you know, like that's the point, is not to, you know, force something, but to advocate for
more. But it does dictate development. And on the other end, with Highway 43, anything that's in those areas of improvement, you don't want somebody coming in and making a development
which
poaches your plans long term.
I will say that I think it's pretty forward thinking of the city to actually have such a plan that they can now use and go out and work with developers and get it right instead of them build something here that we will never be able to do it, or the condemnation would be impossible or whatever. So is that helpful?
Yes, that is helpful.
Okay. So we got like a half hour left, and we should move on then to the capital. If that's done, if we're okay with the committee, we gotta move on to item number 4.
And I will...
This is Lance's favorite part.
Stop sharing my screen, so...
This geo capital.
We can just sort of see everybody. I feel like I talk a lot in these meetings. I'd like a more... Hopefully everybody's feeling robust and heard and... But capital project updates, so we already talked about Main Street, so I won't go into that in detail at this meeting, but we are continuing to work on it. You can see the demo saw cut that we did next to DJ's down close to 10th. We think that's going to work out quite well, so we're continuing to work on that project. We're continuing to try to get the power poles pulled out, which is... You know, it's only taken them 2.5 years, but eventually they'll get there. Oregon speed and other state speeds are sometimes quite different. The other capital projects, we just got bid approval and award, I think, on our annual road program for this summer. Actually, I got an invite from the Robinwood Neighborhood Association to come talk to them about some of the improvements we're doing down there, so I'll be there on the 10th to talk about that. If anybody wants to know, it's all on our website, I believe, now, hopefully updated, and includes a lot of full-depth rework. Like you said, quite expensive. One of the highlights from that project is our bids were high. And so we're seeing costs rise, which leads into my next capital project, the 10th Street Corridor. We've got 60% plans from the consultant that staff is just now printing and starting to review. We're still working with ODOT on getting the roundabout approved and the whole corridor improved, because it impacts the interchange. That's got to go through the Mobility Advisory Committee, and we're trying to get on their agenda. There's a number of other projects in the queue at ODOT, and so we're getting in our spot. But at this point, we don't see any opposition to the 10th Street project at the ODOT level. So I think that's a great thumbs up to try and keep us on track for starting construction next year. We are also talking about separating out with the consultant the undergrounding of the utilities along the frontage right there in front of the youth music project in that area and on Willamette Falls Drive up to 11th, because prior council had requested to add undergrounding of utilities to the project. Didn't really add enough funding to the project to underground the utilities, but we're pursuing it anyway, and we've pursued and we were able, very successful so far, hopefully, in getting undergrounding for most of the corridor on the first phase, but we're trying to get this done on the front end of the second phase, or the 10th Street project. The only bad thing is the 10th Street project cost estimate. We were originally, I can't remember how much of the geo bond, I think $4 million in the geo bond or something like that was earmarked to the project, and then
that's correct, yeah.
And then the SDCs and the utility portions and the road fund was paying for the resurfacing work. So we thought enough money in all of our different fund pockets to fund the improvements, because our 30% plan was a $5.1 million cost estimate for construction. 60% plan set is saying our cost estimate is $7.2 million because of increases in the pricing that the consultant is now seeing from all the other COVID-related issues. The cost of concrete has doubled just between last year and this year. We're hoping that we can, as staff, cut out a lot of those extra costs without negatively impacting the project or redefining the project limits or scope. So there's a lot of pencil sharpening still to do. And I'm also hoping that costs come down next year when we go out to bid, because we're in a very weird dynamic right now, post-COVID, of supply and demand for construction. Yeah. So that's my negative story for the group that you're the first to hear that council hasn't even heard about. But I'm hoping to bring that down to soften the blow. But if you know, any extra money that we have, hopefully we can direct towards this project, because otherwise we're going to have a hard conversation about the GO money and, you know, what is the priority, and, you know, does Sunset get done, or is it just a resurfacing, you know, on Sunset, which, if anybody remembers, Sunset was sort of the relief valve of our transportation plan and the GO bond, where we said, okay, we're going to prioritize Main Street and 10th Street, and we're also going to prioritize matching the grant to Highway 43 and doing the preliminary design on Willamette Falls Drive and 43 so we can pursue more grant opportunities there. And then we were going to plan on doing some improvements on Sunset going up the hill from I-205. But we also intentionally did not start anything on Sunset because we also knew that we didn't have enough money, and we were hoping that other projects would come in under funds and we would be able to then get money earmarked to Sunset. But it looks like quite it could be just the opposite, and that Sunset is significantly reduced or goes away to maybe just a mill and resurface or something like that. So that's my negative news for the day. You know, at some point I'll draft that in an email to council in a way that hopefully doesn't make anybody upset. But anybody that's watching this meeting, you know, like, don't kill the messenger. I don't control concrete prices, and so.
Lance, would that extra revenue come out of potentially out of another project out of the bond fund?
I think that becomes a council conversation on where, you know, how and what revenue is allocated or earmarked to. I mean, certainly the bond fund is a limited pool of money, and there's a lot of competing interest for that money.
But there's also restrictions of what we can and cannot, how we can swap that money around, right?
To some degree, yes. And I think that becomes very much a council conversation.
Okay.
I think other funds, you know, that we're looking at, you know, hopefully gassed, you know, hopefully people drive again, and gas tax revenue goes back up. You know, the more development that occurs in town, the better, because that generates SDCs to match our existing funds. And so, you know, quite honestly, we need those to deliver for the existing residents. So, you know, those all become conversations, I think, at a higher level. And when I mean higher level, I mean probably this group and council, not at my level at staff. I just tell you what the bill is.
Another bond measure?
I think that might have been about Oppenlander, and we're not sure.
Oh, okay. Yes. So we're not doing this bond measure hasn't expired that we're going to renew. It's like you right. See the school district. We're not there yet, right? Not there. Okay.
So yeah. So that's pretty much my capital updates. I think we've touched on everything that's, you know, major at this point. Is there any questions that anybody would have over capital projects or what's happening in the city or that I can answer?
Any questions for Lance?
Go
ahead, Andrew.
Sorry. Has there been any new development in a nutshell over the waterfront?
Well, the you mean the area around the Arch Bridge?
Yeah, waterfront.
Yeah, the whole project. So
correct.
My understanding is that we are, you know, happy to get the Willamette Falls concept plan approved, so that creates a set expectation for the developer there. I think the last update that I saw for council was that there was some movement at the state level on the locks and some funding that's starting to show up there, which is a good thing. The other thing that I would report is that we are actively working now with what's called the Upland site, which is the sort of the big parking lot area in front of the mill and in front of the island area, and that owner is actively engaged in working with the planning department and us on the transportation stuff. And I think that they're also starting to engage on potential ideas that would blend with the waterfront concept. I think also a big funding pot for, quite honestly, the Willamette Falls Drive transportation corridor would be the potential for establishing a urban renewal district over that entire area to help fund some of these transportation improvements, which I don't think a development alone could really support. So I think urban renewal is probably another big, and I don't know if it's so much of a transportation advisory board issue. I think the urban renewal is probably more in the realm of economic development and that committee and the council, but it really helps fund the infrastructure that is critical to seeing that area developed in a way that the city would like it to move forward. So,
do we have an update on the TIF? Have you guys talked about it, Council, Mary? Because I know it was going, but I don't know if it stalled or
not. We haven't talked about it lately.
No update at this time.
Lance, you were referring to the private company or individual that bought the pond recently, right?
Right. And then if anybody recalls too, ODOT was leading a project for a bike ped crossing of the river. That was sort of a joint project between ODOT, the City of West Linden, and Oregon City. They've pretty much sort of run into roadblock, I think, with the tribal issues. And so there's two sort of corridors that have been settled on, I think, in that project. And Mary may know more about that than I do, but I think they've sort of come to a conclusion on that project that they have sort of taken it as far as they can until there's more, details that can be worked out, I think, on the Oregon City side with the tribe over there, possibly. So, and if you have anything to add, Mary, just throw it in there. But
no,
I think
that's your update is all I know.
So I think that's also in the mix. But again, that was more of a concept level. Again, they were just trying to get the conversation started. And I think that's, any kind of bike ped improvements in that area that would cross the river are probably, I may be retired before we see that. So, and I'm not that old yet. But.
It did look like the majority of people preferred the crossing that would be on the, I guess, is it the east side of the Arch Bridge? So
closest to the falls or farther?
No. On the other
side,
closest to the 205 bridge.
Yeah.
So between the Arch Bridge and the 205 bridge.
Right. Well, we talked about where it went into an existing intersection.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Andrew, you just asked a question that I didn't hear him talking about. You were talking about the person who bought the pond?
Yes. Okay. Fairly, I don't know all the details, not, but apparently recently.
Not the pond. So there's the upland site is who we've been talking to, which is the area directly adjacent to the Arch Bridge, which is the parking lot
is
area. Which is Belgravia.
Okay.
There's another gentleman that bought the pond that's closer to Willamette Park that bought that from Wes, and I don't know what the status of that is. I haven't heard anything about that. I think maybe the guys talked to planning a little bit, but it's been more like introductory, like, hey, I bought it, not, you know, having a plan or, you know, providing any kind of context that I'm aware of. Does that answer your question, Andrew?
Yes, it did. Yes, absolutely. It has been confusing, but I'm glad you clarified it. Thank you.
Okay. Item 5, any board discussion, announcements? No? Okay. Do you have any public comments? Is there anybody on the call? I don't think so. Is there?
No, just members.
Just us.
Actually, one thing I do want to bring up, which may help you, Mary, for the next meeting. I had talked to somebody who's a cyclist about the Willamette Falls Drive project, and they were interested in coming, but they may be sending me an email about what's going on. But, I mean, there's a lot of cyclists that come through.
Yes.
A lot of people use it, so they were surprised. They're newer to the city. And, you know, a young couple, but was just surprised at the public pushback on cycling here.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot, too, on kind of comments on social media, but so.
But I mean, like, it sounds like there is a very robust cycling community that's been looking forward to the safety improvements.
Absolutely.
And it was one of the reasons they moved here, because they saw the master plan. Their real estate agent was nerdy enough to give them our master plan. Like, this is
awesome.
Great, we can connect to here. And he was talking about some of the huge rides they did, and he'll go to St. John's. I mean, they will originate most of their rides here in town and go other places. And then, you know, so I'll share that when it comes in.
Yeah.
But I thought it was very interesting. You know,
I have a question when you're done.
Please.
From some people who live on Volp Street. Mm. And I just wonder what is the status of that improvement or widening?
The improvements surrounding the Willamette Park?
Yes.
I don't know if there is any status of it's Ken's project. So Ken would be the lead on that project. I think there's some confusion down there. I mean, we've been talking internally. Jerry's blessing here, but about coming up with like a bigger plan for the Willamette Park area, because, you know, the park land actually extends quite a ways along that corridor, and, you know, what the ultimate build out of the corridor is and what's included in a land use application versus what gets built. If anybody remembers Merrillhurst Park, for example, and the street that borders the north side of that park, boy, I should be able to recall
Captain's.
That. It's right up. It's not Captain's.
Oh.
It was Valley View, I think, is the north border.
Okay.
And Valley View was like 12 feet wide and unimproved. And there was this huge brouhaha between the people that live on Captain's and the people that live on Valley View. And the master plan for, if you will, as I do air quotes, for the park showed the entire potential build out improvements, which was approved by the Planning Commission and the Council at the time. And there was a lot of pushback from the people on Valley View that didn't want to see the street improved because they were fearful of speed and cut through traffic, and they wanted Captain's to connect And the people at Captain said, no, we want Valley View to be improved. And so there was this back and forth. And so the master plan got approved basically like 10 years before I started here. And then the improvements never got built until I started. And then we built out Valley View, which was required by the land use effort back then. And we had a lot of outreach and engagement with the people on Valley View. So I sort of see Volp as sort of a very similar situation where it's like, sounds like something that we need to engage the neighborhood on, but also know that we have standards and know that the community won't always be the way you see it today. And how do we plan for that? And so, I mean, we see that already. I mean, the number of people that live down and or around Volp has more than doubled since really the time I started here. And so it more with the private owner of the pond, it could double or triple or quadruple again. And so, and then with HB 2001, it will double again without any action by the city. So, you know, we get into this, like, what is it? And and I think that becomes a bigger conversation that, you know, would be a good thing to have, quite honestly. Yeah, and so that's my background, and hopefully that gets you a little understanding.
I'm sure, I'll share that with the people who've asked me. Thank
yeah.
you.
I'm supposed to talk to Kathy Holicky tomorrow.
Oh, good.
I don't know if it's the same person who's asking, but I was at their neighborhood association meeting, and that's how we ended up talking about part of it. So.
Yeah, so that's another one. Other thing I would mention is, and sort of following up on your point about the bicycling community, is the ITE conference was supposed to be in Portland. That's why I signed up to be a speaker. But they ended up going virtual because of COVID. And so they told me that next year they're somewhere else, which is where they were supposed to be in 2000 or 2020. And in 2021, they were supposed to be in Portland, but now they're going to be in Portland in 2022. And so they've already started to ask me about the potential of establishing a tour to come from the convention center with possibly a couple of busloads of transportation professionals down to the Willamette corridor. And so I was like, well, see, there's already a potential tourism opportunity where we could have people, like I could have the buses load up right there in front of the cider house, and you know, you can always entice engineers to come to a cidery or a brewery maybe, it's like I see these positive spinoffs that maybe some people aren't immediately aware of, and I just want to share that with the group.
That's awesome, but there is those opportunities. It's just so interesting. When, I mean, like, I already shared the guys. Did I talk about the people at the ale house off the Stromy night that were from Lake Oswego? They were gonna, these guys were going to come in front of me in line. I'm like, dude, no, it's Pastrami night, you know? And so they were behind me then, talking to me. And they came, I mean, we had a good interaction, but they were from Lake Oswego. They specifically rode here to see the bike path. I'm like, this is great. Your downtown looks great. We came here for a place to go on our bikes. And then we didn't know this was here. And then I told them about the farmer's market. Like, we're coming back, you know? So we've got people who are coming here as a destination. And I think particularly for economic development, I mean, transportation is a big element of that, you know? And
that's good news, Lars.
Yeah.
That's great news. Let's get the transportation people.
Okay.
Good job.
Anything else, folks? All right, I adjourn the meeting. And our next one, I think, is September the
23rd. We need to
coincide
with Pastrami night.
I was going to say, don't cut in front of you on this.
No! They're like, we're sitting
down. Bye, everyone. Thank